Good morning. Today is Thursday, 12th of March. Joining us this morning, I guess this is your St. Patty's Day sweater.
Well, it is next Tuesday. St. Patrick's Day is next Tuesday, so we're
ramping
ready.
Up into this thing. Maggie Fleming is alongside this morning. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Brian?
I am a little off balanced.
Yes.
But I think all of us are, so I think that's okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to be spending some time doing some PSA writing this morning and going and visiting medical professionals and see if we can kind of help calm and keep things reality.
Right.
So
that's right.
We'll see.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we'll talk about that once you try to stump the host.
Yeah. So why do we say it? I was looking for something from Ireland, and as I was going through the book, I came across this. Where does the word quarantine come from? I thought that was timely.
Why, from the rock pits.
The rock pits?
Yes.
No.
Where they quarantine the rock.
Good. Excellent. Excellent. No, it comes from the Italian quaranta, meaning 40. In early days, a ship suspected of being infected with some contagious disease was kept outside of port for 40 days in quarantine.
Ah.
There you go.
Kind of like Jesus in the desert.
That's right.
Ooh, notice you appear stunned that I could draw those two points together. don't let an occasional reference to knowledge stun you when it comes from me.
I'm always stunned on this show, Brian. You know that.
Oh.
You just wish I'd be stunned into silence.
Yeah, no, that doesn't make for good radio at all. There was something earlier this week, a news release that started going into this big, long comment, I guess would be the nicest word to say, about if you're going to be in court, and if you're going to defend yourself, can you boil that one down? What's going on?
We're inviting people, if they can reschedule their appearances, to do so. If they're feeling ill, not to come to court, and to consider you can also appear in court by court call. So those are some of the options to try to keep the courthouse as safe as possible. They're really taking as many precautions as they can. We've been talking about it, obviously, with jury service, you know, because you're bringing 50, 60 people together in a room. How are we going to make sure that we're keeping everybody safe?
Well, what is court call?
So court call is where you arrange in advance to call in, and they set it up in the courtroom. So it's live. You're actually speaking to the judge. The judge is addressing you. So we do that. We do that for attorneys who are out of the area who are appearing on a case. But the idea is we're prepared to do it as well for anyone who might be feeling sick. Because as everybody understands, with this particular virus, you can have it, not know it, and then you can have early symptoms that don't seem very bad, and not realize you're already capable of spreading it. So for anyone who's feeling, you know, because a lot of people normally would say, I'm not feeling all that well, but I'll go anyway, or I'm not feeling all that well, I'll still go to work. The idea is, because that might be the early stages of the virus, we're inviting people not to come.
So it's a normal routine process. It just doesn't get implemented that often.
That's correct.
I would suspect that if somebody had even a sore throat, or humble crud, you probably don't want them there.
That is
just regularly normal,
yes,
run-of-the-mill stuff.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And again, it's highlighting the fact there are alternatives, because I know some people are frightened, whether it be jury service or because you have an appearance in court. Oh, if I don't show up, a warrant will go out for me. And this is saying to people, here are your options. Please, please, please do not come. And you're right, Brian. I can't tell you how many times I've sat in a courtroom, you know, like with jury selection, where you've got 60 people in the room, and to listen to somebody with a hacking cough, you can tell everybody is becoming more and more concerned as the day goes on that this person might be, you know, pretty seriously ill and sharing it.
So how do you make connections? I mean, who do you call? The commissioner, the jury commissioner? I mean, who's the outreach?
So
if you're not a legal rep.
So the jury commissioner would be perfect for jurors. You know, there's that online thing you can do. But I think in the press release they were giving you another contact information. I would assume that would go more directly to the court clerk's office, because those are the people who make those arrangements for the courtroom.
And again, it's pretty routine, so they know what to do. It's probably just something we haven't thought of.
That's right. And I'm glad they are thinking of it, and I would hope they would do this, you know, pretty much every winter when we're dealing with a lot of people get the flu and really pretty bad coughs.
Does that mean you haven't been in the jury selection room in a period of time to know what they say?
Oh, I see what you're saying. I was like, no, I oddly enough, Brian, I go to the jury room and then they give me the wave off.
Oh, really?
Well, because normally it's criminal cases, so they look at me and go, yeah, you're not going to be
able
to serve, so bye-bye.
Oh,
right.
Really? You don't get automatic exclusion because of your title?
No. I get my jury summons, and then I actually one time filled out the whole questionnaire, and I said
nobody recognized you?
Well, they did, but for some reason everybody thought, oh, this will have to be something the judge decides. So I went up to the judge who then said, yeah, Maggie can go back to work now. She won't be able to sit on this case that her office charged. But the last couple of times that I've gone in, they've literally just waved at me and said, you know, it's a criminal case. You're good to go.
Nice to see you.
Yeah.
Well, if it was
thanks
a civil case.
I could. That's exactly right. I'd
really?
Be happy to. I've always wanted to be on a jury. I think it would be fascinating.
But you never had to go through
side
of the process, huh?
Exactly. I've gone through the process, you know, and never actually gotten into the courtroom because I've always been excused. My husband's been on a couple of juries once as an alternate. And, you know, after it was done, we talked about that experience. But he didn't get to deliberate, which I think is part of the experience that you hope to have.
Yeah, it's kind of like you cheated if you don't.
Yeah.
You go through all the effort and then you just kind of sit around and wait.
Wait.
Yeah. So the fact that he had one of your T-shirts on
didn't change anything.
Didn't throw the
it was actually
clinker.
Before it was
oh,
before
okay.
I ran. So yeah, he actually got called pretty regularly. It's funny how many people I know get called very very regularly.
I think there seems to be a predilection.
Yes,
I just it's probably like rolling dice. You know, if you're number 7,
you're
just going to pop up more often than number 12.
Right,
it just random. Yeah. You betcha, it's random.
That's right.
I want to see the machine. Have you heard anything about the election completion tabulation? I know you guys don't normally get involved with that.
No,
but
I go online and, you know, the elections office, you can check the latest, but no, I haven't heard anything other than that.
Here we go again.
Yeah.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. Maggie, situations like this with the virus where there's a lot of emotion wrapped up into a fair amount of logic, are there lessons to be learned from this through the criminal justice system about how people react either in times of stress or perhaps running purely on adrenaline?
Is
there a takeaway?
It's interesting because I think we all see it with, you know, our different roles. The courthouse, you know, what happens at the jail, law enforcement, we tend to handle it a little bit calmer in the sense that we tend to have a lot of big blips like this, you know, whether it be power outages or, you know, other issues that occur. So we sort of regroup and go, okay, how are we going to deal with it? It's like yesterday I was exchanging emails, you know, with the jail staff, because obviously if they have anybody that they suspect is having, you know, potentially illness problems, they're gonna want me to make that call right away of, you know, can we let this person out versus what are we going to do with them? Because what they don't want to do is leave somebody in that population to potentially infect others.
Oh, so they won't bring a doc in, they'll take the person.
They've got to get. So they've either going to get that person in the hospital, or the other possibility is, like with some of their elderly inmates, should we be getting them out now? So we're already reviewing some of our cases to try to make that call sooner than later, which I appreciate. And that's exactly it. We're all sort of taking steps of, what if this happens? What's our next? What's our plan?
You plan it out two or three steps.
Right. Yeah. And so we sort of approach it that way because we have to. We're dealing with large populations. We're dealing with public safety, not just because of what we do every day, but because of also the concerns about how it could affect other people at the courthouse and at the jail. But then, looking at it on the personal level, I haven't seen people so much as panic. And ideally, people... we'll continue. And again, I think Humboldt County's been sort of uniquely situated, and based on life experiences, people tend to handle things like this a lot better than what we see other communities do. We tend to be more, let's take care of each other. So I have high hopes that we're going to handle it pretty well here.
Do you have a canary or two as an indicator if things are kind of starting to go? I mean, would you shut down and not conduct business in the courts?
So that's exactly what we're talking about. The idea is some county departments potentially could start working from home, telecommuting. But our job's a little bit different. So, the idea is, would we go down to a bare bones staff? What would we do to really reduce that? I know we're all trying really hard to keep our areas super sanitized and clean. I know the risk manager,
they got to be going crazy.
They've already checked in with us. They want to make sure that we've all stocked up on hand sanitizer, things like that. Because obviously we deal with a population that tends to be a little more frail. When you talk about people who have drug problems and homelessness issues and stuff, a lot of the issues that create, pretty much annually problems with illnesses at the courthouse, we're going to see that pretty quick. So just trying to find ways to keep our environment safe. And then obviously we're all reducing what would normally be opportunities for large gatherings.
You mean no more lunchtime parties, that kind of stuff?
No, I mean... Well,
or when you're getting together with
I mean,
with
personally,
groups.
We're all trying to, reduce
not during,
what we're doing.
Not on the work site.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Although tomorrow we're having a potluck, so I'll have to think about that. I'll have to speak to some of the office
Monitor
folks
a little
about
bit.
That.
Well, that's kind of the curious thing. Obviously, there's no magic number. Over 100, over 250,
yeah.
Over 1,000. Are those just arbitrary numbers, or is there some kind of a rational thought how that number was arrived at?
Right.
I mean, who knows?
Who knows? Yeah.
I don't think that one's ever going to really be shared too much. But I would.
Right.
If you're in the working environment with these folks, you probably, if somebody has a sniffle, it goes through the department.
That's right.
It kind of happens. Yeah.
It does.
What about confidentiality? The opportunity for some of the folks. I think it's your detectives. Okay. Could they work outside the office? Well, they probably do a pretty good chunk of the day anyway.
Right.
So whether or not they check in and say, yell hi down the hall to you, or they're out in the field doing something, it doesn't really disrupt the system too much. But if everything was then available to them out of the house,
right,
the confidentiality component, not that they would be hacked necessarily, or if somebody was going to hack,
right,
why Humboldt County instead of somewhere else? But that does kind of open that potential up. Is that one of the concerns?
We currently have a pretty secure, computer system that we use, and so we have a process we have to use if you're off-site trying to access it. But that's always a concern, it's interesting because I've watched, it's not related to this, but just in general, it's gotten a little bit more cumbersome to access in order to try to create more security. But
just more
more steps.
More doors, so to speak,
exactly.
to go through.
Exactly. It's not like you can have it on your phone. You know, before I could kind of tap my app and things would open up. Now I've got to go through steps to get there. So it's, but again, you know, nothing really is 100% foolproof. That made you feel good, didn't it?
No.
I'm going to go put your Social Security
on. No, I was just saying, nothing's foolproof when you work with fools. That's exactly what left to my mind.
You said it.
Not that that's a reflection on anybody. Let's take that one back. It's 8:30.
Locally owned businesses help our community maintain a distinct personality and to help increase tourism because we don't look like every other place. Small businesses also provide the ability to try on and try out items before you buy and get real expertise, saving you both time and money. When you shop, shop local.
Our award-winning camping department has the gear you need no matter what kind of camping you do. Come in and experience the many benefits of shopping with Pacific Outfitters.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, Redeck, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, and Murphy's Markets. Maggie, what are the challenges I would suspect in, notice that legal term suspect there, I would suspect that is a challenge for any in the district attorney's office is logic versus emotion and emotion versus logic. You know, you get, I truly believe that people not only have a predilection, but they operate on one of those two levels. Either you run by emotion, okay, or you run by logic, okay, flavored with degrees of the other. When you're dealing with a individuals that operate in the one that you aren't, is it as tough for you to get across what you're trying to say as a lot of us feel that trying to do the same thing in our lives?
Absolutely. And I do think that's a really, really important point when you think of just criminal law in general. So much of what people believe should be done is based on emotion. And when you look at perhaps the limits of the evidence, the limits of the facts, the limits of the witnesses, we say, well, here's where we are. But that's impossible to explain to people who have already made up their mind based on emotion what should happen. And then, you know, and I know you and I've talked about this before on this show, the amount of information people rely on that's rumor, you know, well, so-and-so said. Well, unless we have facts and evidence and witnesses, that's never the reality. And the reality must always be what we rely on when we're making determinations about whether or not someone can be charged, what those charges are, and then what the outcome should be.
It's intriguing for me to watch some of the political debates for various reasons, various levels, but people using words adamantly, accurately from their perspective, but different functional definitions. Well, I know, no. Well, no means yes. K-N-O-W, sorry.
Right.
I know it to be a fact.
Right.
Well, I know because so-and-so told me. Whoops.
Right.
Now, is it you believe or is it that you know?
Right.
That statement, whatever it is. How do you disseminate and filter and go through all that stuff without either driving yourself batty or them batty, you know, feeling as if everything's being second-guessed or third or fourth or fifth?
You try really hard to be transparent. You know, that's one thing that I think is so critical in the positions that we have, you know, as prosecutors, trying to really make clear, here's where we are, here's what we have. At the same time, recognizing, you know, particularly pre-resolution of a case, we really can't be out there with here's what the evidence shows, because that would, you know, potentially impact the fairness of jurors. So, but trying to do that. And then, you know, like one of those expressions when people say, I just did it. When they say, well, I've heard people say, I always say, which people? Who are you talking about? what's the basis of their information? And that, a lot of times, that makes people sort of think about that. You know, are you relying on something that, you know, your neighbor told you they heard? Well, who did they hear it from?
Yeah, five times removed
exactly.
from whoever.
And,
yeah.
And we really ultimately cannot prosecute people based upon rumors, based upon what somebody said on a blog, based upon, you know, what somebody posted anonymously somewhere. We really need, as we always have, people to come in and be subject to questioning. You know, the idea is, did you see this? Did you hear it? What did you observe? Not somebody who told somebody told me this.
Documentation, I would think, would be critical in that determination. For the investigators, do they almost have to walk around with a thesaurus mentally or something? So when you say green,
yeah,
do you mean emerald green or lime green?
Right.
Or, I mean, things like that, that would seem to be nitpicky in regular conversation, I would think would be hugely critical.
It's interesting because it's not nitpicky, but there is always that issue of you've got to be sure to do the follow-up. And it's interesting because jurors pick up on this a lot of times in trials where someone makes a statement and the next question must be asked, which is, are you saying that because you saw that? Are you saying that because you inferred that? Are you saying that because the person standing next to you said it to you? You know what
or
I mean?
Or if it's not said.
Right.
You go, hey, wait, time out. I got a question.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And that's, that I think it's so interesting because, you know, that's one thing you really learn as a prosecutor. Your first couple of trials, you're so nervous. You're just trying to get through the questions you wrote down. These are my questions. This is what I'm going to do. And then after you relax a little bit, you realize I've got to really listen to what they're saying and then follow up with, you know, why do you think that's the person who did that? Did you see that? Or is it because the person next to you said, did you see that? He just hit that guy. You know, that sort of thing.
You guys know the answer? I mean, I know you're supposed to know the answer to the question before you ask it.
A lot of times you don't, you know, because you really are dealing with humans, you know, who you've got a police report and these people said these things and hopefully you've reached out to them and said, hey, you're coming on Tuesday. You have any questions for me? Can I just ask you a couple more questions? You know, hopefully you've gone through that process. But for a lot of people, they're still going to say stuff that you didn't know about when they're on the stand. And you can't just let it sit. You've got to ask the next question.
Well, certainly the environment that they're in changed.
Right.
From sitting in a chair across from the desk to sitting there next to the
under
judge.
Oath.
Yes.
Yeah.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:42.
Are you a business owner looking for financial or technical assistance? An entrepreneur looking to start a new business? The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission and the Small Business Development Center want to help. With business loans, classes, and one-on-one consulting, our goal is your success. We've been helping Humboldt County businesses for over 30 years. Visit us at 520 E Street, Eureka, the Prosperity Center, or find us on the web. The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission and Small Business Development Center. We're here for you.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:45. We're back talking shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. Maggie, one of the things that I've found intriguing in the courtroom scenario is when you're doing what we call the equivalent of a client needs analysis in sales, you know. What's going on, fact-finding, database, you know, those phrases are all kind of interchangeable for me with this reference. So you're asking the questions, and you're getting the information, and then all of a sudden you get that clunker. You know, huh, well, that's interesting. When you say, what are you meaning? I mean, do you throw it open that wide in a courtroom setting and really find out on the fly as everybody else is kind of listening in at the same time? Or do you try to take it to a break and then do it one-on-one so that then you can kind of refine that statement?
It really depends on what the clunker is, because sometimes you just have to. You just have to go with it and try to figure out where. And one thing that I really think most of the public, you know, whether it be TV or whatever, they think it's much better orchestrated and scripted than it really is. First of all, we have a lot of witnesses who we can't even find till 30 seconds before they're going to be on the stand. So you are really flying blind. And you're going off of what they once said to a police officer, and they may sit there, you know, depending on how many times they've been arrested themselves or how many times they've experienced, you know, their relationship with the defendant, may or may not say things remotely close to what they once told law enforcement. I mean, I had a case on a murder case where literally, and, you know, I always told the detective it was awesome because he said to the guy, hey, can you come out in my car and talk to me for a second? And so this is the defendant's friend. Guy gets in the car. It's raining, so you can hear the rain on the car on the recording. And the officer, the detective's talking to him, and he kind of, you know, he was dropping his voice. And you could tell he was really concerned about, I don't want to share this with you because the defendant is my buddy. I, too, am a felon. This will not go well. And so in the courtroom, his immediate response was, I've had a head injury. I really don't remember anything about that night. So then I had to go through line by line the recorded statement with him. But you really never know what they're going to do. And that's more true, I think, in criminal law than any other type of law, because so much of what we depend on and rely on for proof is basically the cohorts of the criminal defendant, you know, and it might be fellow felons, it might be fellow gang members, it might be family members who in the moment were truthful with law enforcement, but now will never, ever, ever sit in a courtroom across from their son or their, you know, ex-father-in-law and answer these questions truthfully. And that's really what,
you know, even using, I would think, even using the same words. If they use different words, right, that now we're getting back to what is the impression of those words to the jury, to you, to them, to everybody, and things start spinning a little. Is that dynamic nature part of what attracts you to criminal law?
I would say this. I'm one of those people who like to prepare. So it was very difficult for me early on because I would have my idea of how the trial was going to unfold, and it was never like that.
Gave up on that exercise, huh?
But after the years have gone by, I've sort of adjusted, and now, you know, it's funny because I'll have attorneys come in when they're in trial in my office, and, you know, their hair is flying, and I'll sit and I'll respond to it sort of calmly and go, you know, this always happens. You just sort of have to readjust, you know, okay, now you're going to have to put on these other three witnesses because now you have to sort of show here's the rest of that information. So it's an interesting job that is never dull.
I don't think working with people ever would
That's
be.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Remember to breathe.
Yeah.
Maybe that could be a sign for the desk.
That's
breathe.
Right. Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming by.
Thank you, Ryan.
Enjoy your day.
You too.
See everybody tomorrow.